I certainly wouldn't look for a BCBA as an attorney either. I don't think that that is necessary. Like, I don't think that my accountant needs to be a BCBA, right? So there are many areas that I don't necessarily think that you need a BCBA. But if you're starting out an ABA practice, I guess this is to the newer business owners, and you're maybe you feel like there's areas that you need support in as far as clinical, then yeah, absolutely get a mentor that has that extra experience that can guide you through the clinical side of things. But I think that the vast majority of the people that you're going to need help from or eventually delegate don't need to be a BCBA or a clinician. Hi, my name is Steven.
Hi, I'm April.
This is the 3 Pi Squared ABA Business Leaders Podcast, where we discuss topics on how to create and grow an ethical and sustainable ABA practice.
Together, Steven and I owned a 7-figure ABA practice that provided both clinic and in-home services.
3 Pi Squared has helped over 900 ABA practices start up and expand with our comprehensive products and services geared specifically to ABA. Now, let's get to the podcast.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to our podcast. Welcome to ABA Business Leaders, presented by 3 Pi Squared. I'm April, and this is Stephen.
How are you doing?
And today we're going to talk about red flags, but in a different way than we've talked about them before. We have talked about red flags for certain things, but today we're going to talk about red flags in ABA service providers. So I think those of you out in the ABA space, ABA business owner space, mm-hmm. would agree that it's become a really great market, right? For like an opportunity for others outside of our space.
So you're talking about like consultants or things like this, is that
yeah,
right?
Yeah. So
like I'm people prepared.
People coming, people wanting to take your money.
Yeah.
Whether it's, you know, amazing BCBAs who have decided to like do something mm-hmm. outside of your typical one-to-one, you know, or supervising model, right?
Or companies that have really cool unique names.
Yeah, those too. Mm-hmm. So we've seen a lot of conversations on social media, even like more recently, right? As more and more businesses, providers, mm-hmm. you know, services are out there to help support ABA businesses, it's like, okay, well, how do we know who to trust and what questions should we ask and what are we looking for? Because a lot of us clinicians, right, want to start a business, and maybe you have a dual degree, right, in business, right? Or maybe you're you know, business savvy and you grew up in a family of entrepreneurs and business owners and you really have a good handle on it. But I know that there are a lot of clinicians out there who don't, right? They just want to be able to provide ABA mm-hmm. and do it in the way that they want to within their company. And they're like learning all the business stuff as, you know, as they go. So we'll just start going over they're red flags, and sure. I'll ask you some questions. Sure. This is kind of cold content to Steven. And so we'll see what he has to say.
Can I say something? And you might get into this anyway, but just something to be aware of, like business associate agreements are super important. So if any of these consultants, mentors, coaches, whatever, are going to have access or potential access to your client information, it is important that you have a business associate agreement in place with them. And I would also recommend in one of our handbooks, in the HIPAA policy that we have a business associate agreement questionnaire. You could probably do a Google search and ask, do a Google search for business associate questionnaire, just ask them some questions like, who's their security officer? When's the last time they've had HIPAA training? Things like this. Like, because if they're answering like, no, to a lot of these questions, you may want to look somewhere else simply because they may not have your best interest in place. Mm-hmm. And then one other thing, super important, I've gotten pushback from attorneys that said, I don't need a business associate agreement. We have customer, client?
Confidentiality,
yeah. And that's not true. The HHS is very clear on this, that even attorneys need a business associate agreement in place. So just wanted to say that. You may get into it, but I just wanted to cover that.
Great advice for sure. So red flag number one. So no input or development from clinicians. So if a company, does a company have to be clinician owned to give great value to clinicians? What are some advantages to working with a clinician versus someone who's not a clinician? So just in general, right?
Yeah, I'm not a clinician. Mm-hmm. I think I add a lot of value. Mm-hmm. So I don't know that it necessarily needs to be a clinician owned. While I think there is a benefit to that, but it depends on what area you need support in. So I don't think that you need to have like a financial advisor that is a BCBA. Mm-hmm. I don't think that's necessary. I certainly wouldn't look for a BCBA as an attorney either. I don't think that is necessary. I don't think that my accountant needs to be a BCBA, right? So there are many areas that I don't necessarily think that you need a BCBA. But if you're starting out an ABA practice, I guess this is to the newer business owners, and you're maybe you feel like there's areas that you need support in as far as clinical, then yeah, absolutely get a mentor that has that extra experience that can guide you through the clinical side of things. But I think that the vast majority of the people that you're going to need help from or eventually delegate don't need to be a BCBA or a clinician.
Yeah, I agree. I also feel like in some areas it's very helpful if someone's a clinician. I mean, you've worked closely with clinicians.
Yes.
And you are very much a part of building our company. So you learned a lot mm-hmm. just from that about like the clinical piece. Mm-hmm. And I think if you're in, you know, something like a marketing, I don't think it's necessary. You don't have to have a BCBA, but I do think that when you're writing copy and you're like marketing, doing all the things that marketers do, I feel like it's very helpful to have a BCBA, to at least to understand, and maybe even to be an RBT, you know, like mm-hmm. having some understanding of like the ethics and just the culture mm-hmm. of what we do. But yeah, I mean, I don't think you have to, but I do think in a lot of cases it does like help. But yeah, like an attorney and some of those positions, it kind of almost wouldn't make sense. Now, what is nice though, if those non-clinician owned businesses that provide services to ABA businesses understand what ABA is. That's really nice. It's not a deal breaker necessarily, but it's very nice. And I think that we are meeting new people every day in the space who aren't clinicians, but they have a good understanding of ABA and what it is that we do in our field. Mm-hmm. And it's nice not to have that 45-minute intro of, okay, let me try to explain what ABA is and how we can incorporate and how we can help.
Yeah, but I mean, I think, again, it depends, right? So let's say you need to build a website. I'm not so sure that that needs to be, like, you're going to get a developer, right? For something like that. Same with an attorney. I'm not certain that they need to have ABA experience, while it can be helpful. The problem is, it's kind of very similar to HIPAA. You need something to be HIPAA compliant. It's going to drastically increase the price, right, of the service. So with an attorney, you're looking for someone with ABA experience, that is going to drastically increase the price.
It does.
And just to be clear,
I'm agreeing with you that like you it that you can work with non-clinical.
No, I don't.
But that there are some that is really nice totally. When they are BCBA.
So like with an attorney, you're probably like what I recommend because it's going to be very rare to find an attorney that that's going to have ABA experience. That's hard to find. So, and normally when you're looking for like an employment attorney, I do recommend that you try to find someone that has some kind of home healthcare experience simply because they'll kind of understand a little bit of how it works. Because a lot of like employment attorneys in some states, they just for, they're thinking, oh, okay, this is a 9-to-5 office job, right? And they just don't understand the nuances and the rules that you need to follow. So in that situation, you know, like margin keepers, I don't know if this is going to be, if this could be an ad, but margin keepers, they understand ABA, right? Like that's super helpful when you're in that space. Megan was an RBT. She's got like a certification in OBM. So she's like, so she understands this. And I do believe that that is a benefit when it comes to a biller. Not only does she have a lot of experience in ABA billing, but she understands ABA. I think that that does add. Matt, our marketing person, he does understand ABA. Like, you know, we've talked about this, but like one of my biggest pet peeves with the 15 marketing people that we've tried over the years is like they would say, oh, like they would use it, ABAs. You're looking for ABAs. No, I'm looking for ABA companies. I'm looking for ABA practices, right? Just things like that, that someone in this space wouldn't say, right? It's going to really cause issues when you're trying to market your stuff. So yes, I do think that having some experience in the field will be a benefit. But it's not, like you said, it's not a deal breaker in some cases.
All right. Red flag number two.
Okay.
So a lot of people come into this space, some to start the ABA company, some to provide services to the ABA company, because they don't understand like the overhead in ABA and they just see dollar signs. They see reimbursement rates. And they see dollar signs. And so they assume that ABA business owners have a lot of cash. Yeah. Or, you know, as some people come into it as an ABA business owner thinking that it's going to be a big money maker for them. Right. So how much is too much to pay for these services? Would you rather pay a company $3K to run HR or hire your own HR person for $5K a month? Or, you know, how should you prioritize doing it yourself within your own company versus hiring contractors?
Yeah, I mean, like when it's going to depend, right? And so I can't give you a really good answer on this, maybe. Maybe I can. I'll try my best. But it's going to depend on the gaps that you have within your expertise and the people that are supporting you, right? So like in our case, I had some policy understanding because of my background.
Well, you're
right?
A process engineer. Yes. So you could pretty much turn anything into a process if you understood what it was that needed to be done.
And so like reading that legalese stuff while I'm not an attorney wasn't that complicated for me and I could manage that kind of stuff, right? Like I learned how to build a website, right? So like maybe I didn't need a developer right off the bat, right? And so what normally happens in these situations, I guess the best thing, example I could provide is it's very similar to the insurances that you purchase. So maybe at the start, you only need the simple insurances, right? Professional liability, workers' comp, you know, general liability, stuff like this, right? But as you grow, you're going to have more risk. And so then you're going to be like, maybe I should get, you know, an umbrella policy. Maybe I should get cyber insurance. You should probably get cyber insurance. Sorry, anyways. Maybe I should get, you know, there's different types of insurance that will protect different areas of your company. And so, and then maybe you're wanting to go with a different insurance provider because it covers more areas, or there's more, they will cover more expenses, right? And so you're going to get different insurances at different levels. And when you're just out by yourself, maybe you're just getting cheap insurance, right, to cover the basics. But as you grow, you know, you got $3 million in revenue, then you're going to add different insurances. And I think that adding consultants is very similar. Can you get away with, you know, simple HIPAA security stuff at the start? Probably, right? But then when you have a larger team, 20, 30 employees, you may want to have some on-call support that can set up your devices, that can keep up with all the latest issues that are going on in HIPAA, because you have more risk, right? Does that make sense? Same with an HR person, right? I don't know that I would spend $5,000 on an HR person when I have two employees. Right.
I would
be going with Legal Shield. Right. Yeah. And that would be. But if I have 50 employees and it's like, man, Legal Shield isn't covering me enough, I need that ongoing support, I don't want to handle this anymore, then, yeah, I think an HR person may be the right step. But to say, oh, here, this is an acceptable price. I don't know that I could give you an acceptable price, right? Because, and it depends on the area that you're in. You're probably going to find a cheaper HR person in Alabama than you would in San Francisco, right? Like, these are just things that, you know. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay. Does that kind of answer the question?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, it really boils down to that delegating piece that we talk about too, right?
Yeah.
And also understanding your budget, understanding how much money you have coming in and how much you can afford to go out. But
yes.
Just because someone's offering something like at a super high rate, like, doesn't necessarily mean that it's a great service or a great thing.
No, I mean, I think you would look at the reviews, right? You would ask to see, hey, can I talk to some of your customers out there, right? I think that when you're spending this amount of money on something, you want to make sure that it's, you're going to get what you're asking for.
Mm-hmm.
So that's important to know that you're working with trusted people. I don't know. I mean, it's going to depend on also the personality of the person, right? Like, I'll often get the question, like, what questions should I ask to an attorney or an accountant? And for me, it's not so much what question should I ask, is like, just ask them something, right? And see what their response is. And if you get the feeling that you're wasting their time, right? They're not really answering your questions, or it feels like you're an inconvenience that you're even asking a question, mm-hmm. it's probably not the right person for you, right?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. All right, red flag number three. So, what about a service that they're providing services for multiple different industries and they're just getting into ABA? Maybe they already work with OT or speech or a clinical psychologist or maybe home health care in general, and they're just getting into ABA. Should a company only focus on ABA to be good? What good questions can you ask to make sure that the company really, really understands ABA and isn't just putting it into a basket with like PT, OT, speech kind of things, or home healthcare?
Yeah, I mean, the biggest one that I could, I guess the one that comes to mind more often in this is billing, right? So when we were trying to do our billing course, we interviewed a bunch of ABA billers, right? And then we started talking about ABA billing, and it was quite obvious that they did not understand ABA billing. They couldn't even provide us, like, what are the codes, right? So these are questions that I would certainly be asking. And again, like, they have to, it's going to depend, right? Because again, an attorney is going to be different than a biller. I would not just say, hey, yeah, you did OT billing, great. Well, I'm sure ABA is just as good, right? You're just as good at ABA. That's different where an attorney, maybe it's not that big of a deal. And then, you know, back and forth on marketing, we've had so many marketing people that are experts and amazing, and they've done so much amazing marketing, and then it just doesn't work out because they just don't know this space. So I think I wish that I could give a better answer, but it's going to depend, right? It just mm-hmm. depends. And I think when you're hiring someone, like a biller, for example, they better give you some really discounted rates, not knowing the space. And they certainly shouldn't lock you into a long-term contract if they have zero experience in ABA. That would be, I don't know. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I mean, ABA is very specific, and there's a lot of those strange quirks.
Yeah.
That are very specific to ABA. And so it doesn't mean that a provider coming into this space doesn't know, like, you shouldn't necessarily, it doesn't necessarily mean you shouldn't work with them. Like, if they're willing to learn, if they're putting the work in, and they're, you know, as you're talking to them, it's obvious that they are understanding a bit about ABA and how things work. But yeah, like you said, like I wouldn't come in with a newbie into the field, coming into the field, and, you know, sign long-term contracts or right. pay them a lot of money. And it kind of comes down to the personality too. If it's a smaller business and you strike up a working relationship and they see it as an opportunity to learn from you about how ABA could work with whatever service that they're helping you with, and help, but also know that that's probably going to take more of your time than say if you just hired somebody who was already in the field and understood the field. So.
Yeah. Again, I think it's going to, it does depend a little bit, right?
But it's definitely something to be on the lookout for, because ABA is very specific. Yeah. And
it is really nice. And this is something, again, that I do recommend. And when we vet people, we do try to look for people that have experience in ABA. Okay, you say, especially if they claim they're an expert in ABA or they have many ABA customers, then I want to talk to some of those ABA customers, right? Yeah. I want to be able to ask them specific questions. I think that that's important, because if they claim they have a whole bunch of ABA customers and it turns out they've got one, that may not really, I guess, you know.
Then you have other issues, yes. Perhaps trust issues, yes. With what, yes. Can you exactly. believe?
Yes.
You know, yes. So yeah, for
but
sure.
Like, I'll just say, like, maybe a speech clinician with tons of, like, a lot of experience, mm-hmm. maybe they could come in and help you, you know, it in some cases, because we have had marketing people that have come in, we have one that we still work with, yeah. and there. He does provide a lot of insight, and, yes. and it does help almost that he doesn't have that ABA experience, because, you know,
it's
that
like
can help with
a little bit
some...
of a fresh perspective. Correct. On some of the things that we feel like are, oh, this is just an ABA problem. And he's like, actually, this is something you're going to see, yes. across the board, yes. when you're dealing with this issue. Correct. Or whatever. Right. Correct. And so it kind of helps. But we've worked with him for years now. Mm-hmm. We have that relationship and we're able to hop on a call and talk through an issue, no problem, right?
Yes.
But out of the dozens that we've talked to, we've had two.
Yes.
That we've had, yeah. We have, like, our personalities, yeah. at BCBA, we have the, you know, the guy that we just explained. So, you know, nothing's black and white,
no.
right? It's just really our conversation today is just to help get everyone thinking, right?
Yeah.
And just start with thinking of what questions should I ask? What should I be looking for? What do I need to, you know, I call it your spidey senses, right? Mm-hmm. Like when your spidey senses start going off, like trust your spidey senses.
And like I would also reach out to SCORE. I think that that's a great option where you can get like a business mentor. And like again, very similar to insurance. Maybe they get you, you know, 60% of the way, right? And then you have to specialize at some point. Mm-hmm. But it may also provide you an out-of-the-box view of this. You may find out that you have some blinders that you didn't even know were blinders because you're stuck in the ABA world, right? And so maybe your outreach to parents is too clinical and you need a little different marketing, right? And so they may suggest something that you weren't thinking about, right? So I don't want to say that it has to be ABA all the time. I think getting different opinions from many people is always a good thing, right? Yeah. April and I are so honored to have Margin Keeper sponsor this podcast.
Running an ABA business comes with its share of challenges. Managing clients, staff, insurance, the list goes on.
One thing you shouldn't add to your stress, bookkeeping. That's where Margin Keepers comes in.
They're specialists in ABA businesses, which means they understand exactly what we need.
With Margin Keepers handling your finances, you can focus on what really matters, your clients, and your practice's growth.
They're more than just bookkeepers. They're lifesavers in the financial world of ABA.
So for peace of mind and expert financial management,
turn to Margin Keepers. It's a decision that will lift a weight off of your shoulders.
Check out Margin Keepers at www.marginkeepers.com and see how they can help your business thrive.
For sure. All right, red flag number 4, no referrals or no referrals from businesses that look like you. So yeah. Referrals are crucial. Like, they are super important in knowing how a company will treat you.
Yes.
So also, though, if you ask for someone to, like, for referrals, like, to be able to reach out to other people using their services and they send you to like multi-state organizations or, you know, but you're like a small shop, then maybe that's not a good match or vice versa. You know, like you just have to kind of see who has the referrals, what they say, what types of businesses they are to look for. So would you rather go with an ABA specific startup with no reviews or an established business with reviews, but from other fields like home healthcare?
That's a difficult question to ask. I would have to interview them. I would just have to be able to see how they respond. And if like, because, you know, we've talked about this, about hiring too, right? Should I hire an RBT or should I hire just someone with no experience? And the vast majority of the time, I would pick someone with no experience where they had a willingness to learn and they were genuine and honest, right? So if this person comes in and says, hey, I don't have any experience, but I do this thing and I have done this thing, let's work together. And they were able to give me a contract that was like, beneficial to both of us, then yeah, sure, let's try it and see, right? But it may not be the right fit, but you would want to be able to eject, right, without being stuck with some long term, you know, you have to sign for a year. That's not cool. I guess it's gonna depend.
Okay. Red flag number 5. They sell hard and have unbreakable contracts. Yeah. You just already, you know, said that. So like different, depending on the market, right? Depending on, you know, they may have contracts with no opting out, or you have to pay high fees if you opt out, things like that. Mm-hmm. So how long is too long to be locked into a contract? Do you always ask for opt outs, or are you willing to commit to 1 year or more to save money?
I mean, I'm thinking about our ABA Business Leader membership. That is a year. It's a 12-month membership. I think that for something like building your business, like we follow you through getting your in-network contracts, right? And so I think that has to take a year, right, to go through all of that. So I'm fine with selling that as a year, a 12-month membership, right? Like, and so we do not offer a 1 month membership. So there are certain things that you're probably going to have to pay for a year, right? Many of the subscriptions that we have, you know, for our websites and stuff like this, you can get maybe a monthly fee, but it's going to cost a lot more. So if I know I'm going to use it, I might as well get the year fee. I would say that some practice managements are probably going to be like this. So I wish that I could give you a better answer, but it's going to depend, right? And I think if they are going to lock you into a year, it's what do I do if I don't like this? Do I get a refund, right? Like, for practice management, especially if I'm paying $1,000 a month or, you know, maybe even more, and I don't like the way this works, do I have to continue paying you and then also have to pay somebody else? But then you also think about, like, and I know that this isn't really a contractor or anything, but a lease on a building. I mean, you're stuck, right? Like, you're probably going to have to sign a 2-year lease.
Well, minimum, I think for businesses, the minimum is like 3. And even still, sometimes it's hard to get a 3-year lease. And at least that's how it was in Northern Virginia.
And then, with attorneys, a lot of them require a retainer, right? And so that's just the way it is. So... And then HIPAA consultants, I mean, a lot of them do require a year kind of contract that you can go, but some do month to month. So I guess, again, it's going to depend on how much value they have, but if they do come with high, really good ratings, you've heard from others that this is really good in the ABA space, then I'm not opposed to signing a year or two contract, right?
I feel like it's definitely worth asking, like, what if I'm not happy with this? I mean, some things are just like the business, the members, the business leaders membership, but then, like, I'm also thinking things like marketing or things like, I can't think of it, but like, if you need more than a month to really show to get anywhere, right? And so you might, the person contracting with you, I know we've done this with some people that we've worked for, with contractors that we brought in to help 3Pi Squared too. It's like, okay, we need like some kind of time commitment to know that we can work with each other to work through the issues. Mm-hmm. And we also need to know that if this isn't working for either, then we do have an exit plan, right? With minimal, minimal money or minimal like hardship or whatever, right? Correct. So it is like more conversation.
Yeah, I guess it also depends like how big of promises they're asking for too, right? Like, what are the promises that they're saying? Are these like crazy lofty promises that's just something
I don't, in my experience though, I feel like other than like things like memberships and practice management software, stuff like that, they just kind of make sense. That's it's typical to have like contracts, like year-long contracts, mm-hmm. like or like phone services and things. I mean, some stuff that's just how that industry is. But I do feel like other, especially small companies who are trying to get into the ABA field as service providers and wanting to help ABA providers, then like the willingness to work together, I think is a big deal. And that's what we're finding though. Most small companies who are coming into this area, right? To this field, most are willing to work together. And I think, feel like that also shows their understanding of ABA as a culture and like serve, like what we do, right? As to, right? Okay, so those are our 5 red flags that we went through. Okay. But I do have a few more questions for you.
Sure.
So are there specific questions in general that you should ask? I know we went through some questions through these flags, but are there certain questions that we didn't cover today that you want to make sure that we can talk about when they are interviewing service providers?
Yeah, like I said, like especially when you're dealing with PHI, the vendor or the person you're working with should provide you a business associate agreement. Because again, if they're not providing you a business associate agreement, then that to me is a red flag. Because, if you're dealing with like a HIPAA security officer and he doesn't give you a business associate agreement, there's a problem, right? If you're working with a biller and they don't give you a business associate agreement, then what are they doing, right? They should have a template to provide you. You should not have to provide them a template. So, and then, like I said, there are certain questions around that that I would be asking, right? Like, who is your security officer? What do you do in case of a breach? You know, things like that, I think are really important. And then on the attorney side of things, I do like to ask questions around, do you have any experience with ABA? And if the answer, which more than likely is going to be no, I don't even know what ABA is, then we're asking questions around, especially if you're working in home, obviously, but do you have any in-home healthcare experience, respite care, early intervention, you know, things like that. Is probably, even if they have like education, like school experience, that could be helpful. At least they're going to understand a little bit about you, which can be helpful. But again, you may not be able to find that. But I would like another situation with an attorney, especially like this happens all the time, and it's really difficult. Is like, do I need a PLLC to be an ABA provider in this state, or do I need an LLC, or do I need something else, right? Like, I went through this, I don't know, 4 or 5 months ago in Texas, and I went to the Texas government, again, I tried emailing back and forth, but do they need a PLLC, because it kind of looks like they do, and they're like, I don't know. Right. And so like this is it's wild that the government can't tell you if you need a certain business structure. And then the same with California. It's some people are claiming that you cannot have an LLC as an ABA, as a BCBA. Yet the BCBA is not licensed in California. So therefore, you should be able to. And I'm getting a variety of opinions from ABA business owners and attorneys and accountants in this space. So, you know, so having someone with that experience can be beneficial, right? So I don't know. What questions can you ask?
Yeah. I think you covered it. Okay. I mean, I think too, like just when you're asking these questions, you already said it is like, how do they respond?
Yeah.
Like what's their tone when they're responding? You know, are they seem to be willing to discuss these things and work with you or not? And depending on what the service is that you're contracting or purchasing or whatever, will depend on like what level of that you need, right?
Yeah. And I would also say trust your gut. Like I think that there's more value in that than a lot of people where, you know, as an engineer, my thing is, you know, information, data, right? Well, what do the numbers say? And I would assume that a lot of BCBAs are probably that way too. Oh, the reviews are good. All these people said they were good. So therefore they're good. That may not necessarily be true. And, you know, there are probably some people out there, I can't imagine any, but that probably wouldn't want to work with me, right? I think I'm awesome, but they may be like, yeah, we just don't mesh, right? Like, this just isn't the person. I need somebody else that can do this, right? So there are many people out there that are doing amazing work in this space, and it's really important that you find the person that you can work with, mm-hmm. right? And again, that you get what you need. I think that is the probably the most important thing is if they are not providing a value to you, then you should not be using them, right? No matter what the reviews are, like if they're not giving you what you expect or giving you what was agreed upon, then we need to stop.
Yeah, right? I agree, because you know, part of you want to enjoy work, absolutely. Right? And you know, opening and building a, you know, an ABA business, building anything is hard, yeah. right? And challenging. And so like the more people that you can surround yourself with that you enjoy and you get along with doesn't yes. necessarily mean that you're going to like, you would be friends with them outside of work, but yes. on a working relationship, you get along with each other. Then yes. that just makes your life a little bit nicer.
Yeah.
Okay. So now for 3Pi Squared, mm-hmm. we also work with other services, right? We contract with other professionals as we work together, as we help provide information. For you guys listening, you know, if there's something that we don't know, we're reaching out to find who does know it. Mm-hmm. And so we go through similar processes to this, as we are looking at who do we want to back, or who do we want to bring in to our teams, or, you know, to, you know, have affiliates with or whatever, right? Like, so I don't know if they're from that angle, if there are any pieces that you wanted to mention or talk about.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, so like we do try our best to vet the people that we work with. And what, you know, again, a benefit that we provide is that we have a lot of customers. So we have 1,200 ABA, it's probably more than that. It's probably getting closer to 1,300 at this point, ABA companies that we work with. So in this space, we... when we are working with other ABA, vendors, I guess.
Vendors, yeah, that's a good way to put it.
A lot of the time one of their customers is more than likely one of our customers, right? So we can get that feedback and get some real time testimonials without having to do too much. And our customers are always recommending services for us to try, companies for us to try. So that's what we do in this space, right? Is to help, find some trusted, companies that you can partner with. So, you know, again, Matt, Megan, Kim, JJ is another awesome person in this space, right?
So many
margin keepers, right? Like, so they're like, you know, and so some of these happen to be our sponsors, but we still do the same thing for our sponsors. We want to make sure that we are affiliated with, and we're recommending services that are good services,
right? People that we would use if we were still,
and in some of them we do
ABA business, and some that we use as being consultants for ABA businesses. Yes. Yeah. All right. Well, hopefully this conversation was helpful for you guys. Hopefully, at least like I said, like the kind of the idea behind this is to get you thinking. Mm-hmm. As you know, there are more and more of these conversations online, and just kind of help get you thinking what questions to ask, what you're looking for, and just trusting yourself and reaching out, collaborating, right? Reaching out to other BCBA business owners and getting their opinions on things. Like, you know, the more that we all work together, talk about these things, the better, right?
I think for the most part, at these companies coming in and specializing or trying to specialize in ABA, I think is a benefit to us all.
Absolutely.
I think that there are a lot of areas where we're just not, you know, maybe hitting the mark, right? And so I think that having expertise come in from other areas, other fields, I think is a benefit. I think it would be great for some ISO guys to come in and try to get into the space where, you know, these are standards. These standards are already built, right? There are healthcare standards in ISO. I think that someone like that could be a benefit to this field, simply because it doesn't have to, in my opinion, there are a lot of areas where it doesn't need to be an ABA-specific standard, right? So I think that, like, standards are standards for a reason, and I think that they can be done in that way. I think, you know, Jennifer Fitzpatrick is a great resource, right? In that case, where she came from the hospital system. And she wrote the book on session notes, right? I think that she has a lot of value to add to this space. So I don't necessarily think it has to be a BCBA coming into this space. I think if you are coming into this space for the right reasons, you have your why, right?
Yes, I think you having your why is so important. And it's so funny because what I was going to say just now as we ended is, so if those of you listening would, you know, want to branch out and start working more with ABA companies, reach out to us. But then I was like, who's going to be listening to this podcast unless they're already an ABA like person? Yeah. So yeah. I mean, if you know of anyone, hey, send them our way. We love to collaborate and you know, brainstorm ideas. All right. So I think that's enough for today. Thanks everyone for joining and can't wait to see what we have to talk about next time.
Oh, and hey, if you're listening to this and you haven't left a review on our podcast, I'd really appreciate it if you leave a review.
That would be awesome.
Yeah, that'd be great.
That would be helpful.
Yeah. Thank you.
All right. Have a great one, everyone.
Bye. Thank you for listening to our podcast. Hopefully it was helpful. If you would like to gain access to this entire video and actually our entire library of videos, please join our ABA Business Leaders membership. You can find that at www.3pisquare.com.